Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and this is Unlocking Us. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Mark Brackett, and he is the founding director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence and is a professor in the Child Study Center at Yale University. His research focuses on the role that emotional intelligence plays in learning, decision-making, creativity, relationships, physical health, and performance. I know him from his many, many scholarly articles. I think he's published over 100 scholarly articles. You may know him from places like the New York Times or Good Morning America, The Today Show, PBS. He's just dedicated his life to emotional literacy. In his groundbreaking work at Yale, he is the lead developer of RULER, which we'll talk about in the podcast, which is an evidence-based approach to social-emotional learning that is now inside of over 2,000 schools from preschools to high schools around the world. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to dig into his book, Permission to Feel, which just came out. The full title is Permission to Feel, Unlocking the Power of Emotions to Help Our Kids, Ourselves, and Our Society Thrive. You're going to hear me at my most nerded out geek on-ness, if that's a thing, in this podcast, because I've been working on a project in emotional literacy for the last 2 years, something that's going to be coming out in 2021. He's one of the people who I really look up to the most. I've learned from. He said a couple of things during this podcast that blew my mind, just not only as an emotions researcher, but as a person. So settle in. Put your ear pods in and get ready for your walk or grab your mug of tea wherever you are. I hope you can get your emotions on, your geekness on with me in this because I think Mark has a lot to teach us. All right. So Mark, I think you know what question I have to start with after reading your new book. You want to guess?
It's probably going to be about how I'm feeling.
I wanted to be an original here. Come on. I wanted to be the feeling OG. How are you feeling right now?
Well, I'm excited to be here with you. I'm a little overwhelmed about what's happening in our world right now. So I'm having a lot of feelings.
A lot of feelings. I need to ask you this. This is going to be like a free session for me, y'all, and y'all can listen to me get fixed. So here's what's interesting for me, and I don't know what to make of this. I am exhausted and I am hopeful. I am weary and I am grateful. And there's this weird thing going on right now. So we start all of our meetings on Zoom with my team. There's probably 30 of us with a two-word check-in, feeling check-in. That's how we start our meetings. And what I'm seeing right now are these weird paradoxical feelings and emotions. What is that?
I think it's normal. You know, actually, I just did a study last week with 5,000 people across the nation asking them, you know, how are they feeling? Of course, the number one emotion was anxiety.
Right.
It just blew up. But then there were people who, you know, felt grateful and hopeful and optimistic. I think it's more of a regulation strategy that it's, I've got to say that because I got to have hope because I just got to have that right now.
Oh, wow. So is there a difference between like a regulation strategy and bullshitting people? Like what's the difference there?
Well, our brains, you know, like to tell ourselves stories, right? So I think it's a helpful strategy. It's a self-talk strategy. You know, I've got to be grateful. I've got to be hopeful. It's going to make a difference and I'm going to get through this. And having that positive self-talk makes all the difference.
Oh, man. I knew it, y'all. I knew this was going to be good. Okay. So before I start and before I dig into your book, Permission to Feel, I have to say that social emotional learning, emotional literacy has been a big part of my work for 20 years. Your work is amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I mean, just incredible. Okay, so I want to start with this quote. You write, "It is one of the great paradoxes of the human condition. We ask some variation of the question, how are you feeling, over and over, which would lead one to assume that we attach some importance to it. And yet we never expect or desire or provide an honest answer."
Yeah, I know. I did write that.
What the heck? You did write that.
You know, I think the problem is that we don't want to spend time dealing with people's feelings. So we want people to just say, fine, okay, good, and we can move on. You know, think about teachers, think about parents. Like, parents are getting up in the morning, it's 7:40, they got to be in their car at 7:45, the kids got to get on the bus. You know, they say, good morning, honey, how are you feeling? And what if they hear hopeless, disappointed, sad? I'm angry, I'm overwhelmed, I'm anxious. That means you've got to stop what you're doing and provide that unconditional love and support. And it sounds crazy, but people don't have the time for it. So why bother asking? And I think that's something that really needs to change in our nation and the world.
Okay. I got to tell you that when you just went through that role play, I wish y'all could see my hands right now. My palms are sweating because I do what I do for a living. Steve's a pediatrician. So if we at 7:35 said, how are you feeling, sweetie? And one of our kids said, overwhelmed, anxious, maybe a little depressed. I would be like, can we talk about it on the way to school?
Exactly. And think about your profession.
I know.
This is what you do. And imagine parents who have not had an emotion education. Teachers who have not been trained in social and emotional learning. It's a lot of information to deal with.
Okay, before we dig in to everything you have to teach us, which is so much and so good.
Thank you.
Tell me about Uncle Marvin and tell me about, can we talk a little bit about your own experiences with emotions and...
Of course.
The big permission you got in your life?
So, you know, as you know from reading my book, I was sexually abused as a child, and it was from when I was very young until I was in around fifth or sixth grade. So from like 5 years old to 10 years old. And you can imagine when there's an adult who basically threatens you and says, if you share what's happening, you're going to be hurt. If you tell your parents, you know, there are going to be repercussions. You're trapped with your feelings. You feel shame, you feel disgust, you feel hate, you feel anger, anxiety, the list goes on, and you have nowhere to go with those feelings. Now, I was blessed in life that my mother's brother, who was Uncle Marvin, who happened to be a middle school teacher in the Catskill Mountains of New York State, was working on a book and on a curriculum to deal with kids' feelings. And so when I disclosed what was happening, you know, he was the only adult who was there for me. You know, he just listened. He didn't say, you know, toughen up like my father did, and didn't have a breakdown, you know, like my mom did. And God bless my parents. They did everything they could, but they just had no resilience. They had no strategies to deal with their feelings. But Uncle Marvin just had that, as I call it, he was the compassionate emotion scientist. He was open and curious, never judgmental, great listener, and didn't tell me what to do, but rather he was my coach. You know, he helped me to think through what the alternatives were. And he gave me hope. I dedicate my entire career to him.
First of all, thank you for sharing it because it's such a hard thing to share and talk about. And yet it's such a prevalent form of trauma and violence that we just don't talk about enough. And not everyone has an Uncle Marvin.
I know. And I hear people tell me that all the time. You know, they didn't have that adult in their life. And what I know from research is that about 2/3 of our nation's youth don't feel they have a supportive adult like in their school. Think about that. Going to school every day, not feeling like there's an adult who cares about you or who is there for you.
Do those same research participants, those same children, also feel like they don't have anyone at home either?
There are lots of kids who feel the same way at home as well, for sure.
Right. And then what's hopeful about the story to me, when I was reading your book, I kept thinking, be the Uncle Marvin.
100%.
Be some kid's Uncle Marvin. You know, be the person who, when you say, how are you, look genuinely into someone's eyes as if you really care. And then if the answer makes you late for school, screw it, be late for school.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's my dream, is that, you know, I'm going to make a world filled with Uncle Marvins.
Yeah. We need that, right?
We do. We really need it. Right now, we need it more than ever.
So I want to get into some nitty-gritty. And I think it's because I've been working on a project for the last couple of years around emotional literacy. And of course, I read your book. Like, I ate it. I took every page out and I ate it. It's just incredible. And the data and the way you approach things with, you know, equal parts scientific rigor and big, juicy heart. Like, you just We don't see that a lot in our profession, right?
I appreciate that.
But we don't see it a lot. Is that
It took
true?
Me a long time to figure out how to do it. You know, it took me till I was 50 to write my book for the real world.
Because we're trained that if it's too accessible, we're not that smart.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the training in academics. And so you have just taken this incredible science and made it not just digestible, it's like a page turner for people. I just loved it.
Very sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. And so I have a question that I think is helpful. Can you talk about what is an emotion? What is a feeling?
Sure.
How do you think about those differently or the same?
So they're related, you know, and I think for, you know, for most of us, it doesn't matter if it's an emotion or if it's a feeling, if it's a mm-hmm. mood or, you know, it's an experience that we want to connect with and understand. But in the basic sense, think about it in the morning. You wake up and you're kind of appraising the world around you, like from your own inner dialogue to, you know, what's happening around you. And you're saying, I want to approach, I want to avoid, I feel pleasant, you know, I don't feel so pleasant today. And then you're checking in with your body and you're saying, I got a lot of energy, or I feel kind of depleted and tired or exhausted. And that's how that mood meter tool that is in my book, you know, was derived from research in that area. And so like the feeling, right? I feel like approaching, I feel like avoiding, is this kind of core experience. But the emotion, right, is more granular. It's more specific. Anger is about injustice. Disappointment is about unmet expectations. Anxiety is about uncertainty. The language of emotion is what I think we really need to get at in order to help ourselves and other people thrive.
I have to share this with you because I think it's really interesting. And everything that I find in my work mirrors so completely what you find in your work. So for the last, since 2006, we've been asking folks who go through our curriculum to write down the name of the emotions that they can recognize in self and name, mm-hmm. and what they can recognize in other people and name. And so we have, I don't know, maybe 15,000 pieces survey back. The mean number that people can identify and name in self and others, 3.
Wow. Yeah. It's just that people have no training in emotion recognition. I have a whole theory about that. Firstly, it's not part of the curriculum. How much time do we spend in school learning about feelings and emotions and moods? You know, when you analyze the curriculum from math to language arts to science to whatever you're learning, you know, even with social and emotional learning, it's still an add-on. It's not integrated. It's not part of our education.
I hate that. Yes.
Yeah, that's my career goal is to make social and emotional learning a permanent part of our children's education. And this is where in my book, I talk about the ruler skills. Mm-hmm. And that first is that core experience. Do I want to approach? Am I in the yellow, which is that high energy, pleasant place, or the green, or blue or red, which are, you know, the red is that high activated, unpleasant, the blue, low energy, unpleasant. And then you say, well, what's going on for me right now? Like, what's the story I'm telling myself? Well, I'm about to do a podcast with Brené Brown. Oh, well, am I anxious or am I excited? Apprehensive or am I eager? I'm about to go give a presentation. I just got bad news. So you're trying to figure out the story behind, you know, the experience. And what I find is that's really helpful to then find the word. It helps you label the feeling.
But I mean, all the majority of people we work with know, and this is from CEOs to prisoners in, you know, people in correctional facilities, when all they know is happy, sad, pissed off. I call it the mm-hmm. mad, sad, glad trilogy. You asked yourself questions, very nuanced questions just now. Am
exactly.
I anxious? Before we get into ruler, which I think is so brilliant, you talk about 5 areas where feelings matter the most. Make the case to me why, not that I need it, P.S., but make, because I am so on board. I am behind you paddling.
I appreciate that.
Make the case why understanding emotion matters.
Well, that's my call. When I do my presentations, I call that slide my money slide. Because for anybody who's a naysayer, you know, I just say, you just don't know the research. Because once you understand the data and the science behind this, there's no way that you won't want to take this seriously. So the first is that emotions matter for attentional capacity. I mean, let's be, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I was a C&D student in elementary school. And, you know, with all modesty aside, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy, but I couldn't function academically. I mean, think about it. When you're feeling nervous, and I was bullied horrifically. I had parents who had troubles. So I was being abused. Do I really want to learn about the Roman oligarchy? Am I really going to be able to focus and concentrate? I mean, let's get real.
Right.
I just want friendships. I want love. I want safety. I want to get home without being bullied and hurt. So we know that our emotion system is inextricably linked with our cognitive system and our attention. The second is decision making. I mean, think about it. You know, we like to think we're rational creatures. Here's an example. In a study we did with teachers, we randomly assigned them to be in a good mood or a bad mood. It's pretty easy. Take 5 minutes and think about a good day. Take 5 minutes and think about a bad day. And then we had them grade the exact same paper. Lo and behold, 1 to 2 full grades difference. When we asked the teachers, do you believe that how you felt had any influence over the way you evaluated that essay? 90% said no. So think about that. Their emotions clearly shifted the way they viewed the same content. But we don't want to believe it.
That's so powerful.
We don't want to believe it because we don't want to. That means we have no control. You know, that means there's no free will. The third is relationships. I like to say in the simplest form, emotions are signals to approach or avoid. So my facial expression, your facial expression, other people's, how we feel on the inside sends messages. Approach, avoid. Have you ever worked with someone who is like that disgruntled character?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that person. Do you say to yourself, gosh, I'd like to work with them for the rest of my life? No, you're like, I'll go down this hallway. I'll do anything to avoid them. The fourth has to do with our physical and mental health. Here's an example. In our work with educators, what we found is the following. The culture and climate of their school was highly correlated with their anxiety, their stress, their negative feelings, which also was correlated with their mental health problems, with their sleep troubles, and their body mass index. So think about that. This is how our emotion system and our environment are all linked together and connected to our physical and mental health.
There's no question. I mean, God, it just makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then it's this vicious cycle because cortisol, insulin levels change. I want the fatty foods and I want immediate gratification. And then it just loops and loops and loops.
Then I'm in shame for having eaten that. Yeah. It's crazy.
Completely.
I speak from just research, not from personal experience.
Yeah, there you go. Me too. And then the final one we call performance and creativity. You know, one thing that people often say is like, you know, your cognition. You know, my students, for example, here at Yale where I work, often say to me things when I teach my class. They say, you know, Professor Brackett, I didn't need emotional intelligence to get into Yale. And I say, well, you're going to need it to get out. And because nobody's going to hire someone, right, that has that kind of attitude. And of course, many of my students are fabulous. Most of them are, but they didn't have an emotion education. You know, they went to good schools and they got in because of their SAT scores and their grade point averages. But the truth is, you know, when you go to the real world, I get CEOs that I work with, they say things like, we can't stand these Ivy League graduates. They're so entitled and they're, you know, they don't work well on teams and they just think they know everything. You know, we want people who are flexible, people who, you know, are inspiring. The skills that we never teach. So I think that we need to rethink education to make sure that A, our educators are taught emotion science, and B, our kids get these skills from preschool until whenever.
God, it's so, the microphone's working. I just have no words because I spend so much time working with leaders of these Fortune 100 companies, and 60% of the work they have to do is social emotional learning.
Mm-hmm.
People are coming with skills. People can code. People can think about financial strategy, but people lose their shit in meetings. People don't know how to talk to one another. People avoid hard conversations because they don't know that awkward is okay to feel. It's incredible that, what is it going to take, do you think, to make this case?
You know, it's going to take all the students who are going through this training now to become the next generation of leaders. I have faith that adults can learn these skills, and I've demonstrated that. But the mindset of adults, you know, this is an example. So I gave a talk at in one of our big departments here. I won't name it right now. At the end of my presentation, one of the senior professors stood up and he looked at me and he goes, "What happened to Yale?" And I said, and I'm a bit of a self-saboteur. So I said, you know, tell me more. And he goes, "Mark, this is Yale. We produce Nobel laureates, not nice people." And I was like, okay. And then I can facilitate a group. And I said, does anyone else have a different perspective? Lo and behold, another professor stands up and looks at me and he goes, "Here's what I learned, Mark. Sometimes you just have to be a blank. Because then the people who work for you just shut up and do what you tell them to do." And I looked at the chair of this whole school and I said, like, are we making a movie here? What is going on? Like, I don't know. What is happening? And I thought the chair of this department was just going to cry. I mean, he was so embarrassed. And he looked at me and he goes, "Why do you think I asked you to come in?" And so, you know, we have a lot of work to do, you know, to get people to be on that, you know, emotions matter bus. And that's why I do the science, and that's why you do your work. And, you know, I'm going to keep going until I get everyone to understand that data and to understand that our cognitive abilities matter, but how we deal with life. You know, I always say things like, so many of our children don't reach their fullest potential because they can't deal with the feedback they get. They can't deal, you know, with the disappointment, the frustration, the anxiety around the content. It's not that their ability to be creative. It's that when they fail at being creative and when they get harsh feedback, they can't deal with the feelings around it. And they give up not because of their ability, but because of their inability to deal with their feelings.
You know, I have to say, I was thinking about this in prep for our conversation, and I have never met a truly transformational leader in my career. And I've worked with a lot of leaders, just like you and all the big companies. I've never met a truly transformational leader that did not have a deep understanding of their own emotional landscape and the emotional landscape of other people. I just never have.
I agree. We did this study a couple of years ago with 15,000 people across the workforce. And we asked them about their feelings. You know, how do they feel each day at work? And, you know, we found not like the anxiety that we had today in the study I mentioned earlier, but, you know, about 50 to 60% of the feelings were negative, you know, on a daily basis. But here's what the magic ingredient was. We also learned about the emotional intelligence of their supervisor or their leader. We found a 50% difference in inspiration, that someone felt inspiration 50% more when they were in an organization with a leader with higher emotional intelligence. Their frustration levels were 30 to 40% less. Their intentions to leave the profession were significantly lower. Their burnout lower. So these are skills for us, but they're, you know, our leaders have to have these skills. Because we also found ethical behavior was related to the emotional skills of the supervisor and leader.
No question.
So many variables are related to the person who was in charge having the skills to manage people and manage their own feelings.
And it's so funny too, because, you know, you talk about your money slide. And I think for me, the moment where I get people's attention is when I talk about courageous leadership requiring the ability to attend to fears and feelings of the people we lead and serve and support. And just like in your Yale experience, so many people jump up, you know, arms tightly crossed over their chest and say, "I'm not a therapist, I'm a financial strategist, and I don't need to attend to fears and feelings." And inevitably, I will say, "Tell me your biggest struggle. Tell me your biggest time to suck dealing with problematic behaviors." I'm like, right, because you can either spend a reasonable amount of time attending to fears and feelings or an unreasonable amount of time dealing with problematic behaviors. You're not digging
enough. Couldn't agree more. I call it, we need to be preventionists, not interventionists.
Oh, God, I love that.
If we are preventative and we help people develop the skills they need to navigate their lives, we don't have to spend millions and trillions of dollars like we are right now intervening.
That's right. I mean, that's science. That's right. Okay, let's talk about Ruler. Tell us what it is, tell us how it came about, and let's walk through it together.
So Ruler is an outgrowth of the theory of emotional intelligence that was developed by my mentors, Peter Salovey, who is now the president of Yale, and Jack Mayer, who is a professor at the University of New Hampshire. And so as I was working with them as both graduate student and a postdoc, I was working with my uncle on this curriculum. And I was playing in the real world and I was playing in the scientific world. And I was parsing out the different skills that the scientists had come up with and that my uncle had been working on. And essentially, it came together as Ruler. And so RULER is recognizing emotions in oneself and other. So paying attention to the cues in my body, the cues in my mind. It's recognizing emotions in other people. So face, body, voice, behavior. Understanding of emotion has to do with knowing the causes and the consequences of our feelings. Going back to our example earlier, I've given, I don't know, 3,000 presentations. I ask people, what's the difference between disappointment and anger? Do you know that three people in the last 10 years could really define the difference? People say things like, one is internal, one is external, you know, one is a secondary emotion. Like, but what's the psychological difference? And which is disappointment, unmet expectations, anger, perceived injustice. And the reason why that matters is because it helps us to then label that feeling properly. And then you have to decide, am I angry or am I enraged? Am I just irritable or am I annoyed? So that's the R, the U, and the L of RULER. It's recognizing, understanding, and labeling. I call the skills that help us create meaning of our experience. So I know what I'm feeling by the R, the U, and the L, or how someone else is feeling.
So I want to stop you. I want to stop you before you go to the E and the R. Let's stop at RULE. Okay, R is recognizing the occurrence of an emotion by noticing a change in your own thoughts, energy, or body, or in someone else's face, body, or voice.
Correct.
Recognizing. Tell me what you find as the greatest barrier to the R, to recognizing.
Pausing to just be self-reflective. We don't do that. I always ask people, how many times through the day, before you, when you hang up the phone with one person, you go into the next meeting, you take that breath and just check in with how you're feeling. People are like, what are you talking about? I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So there's that piece in the self-awareness. The problem with the other awareness is that we like to attribute emotions to people. Right? We don't want to really know how they're feeling.
Right.
Brene, why are you so angry? Why are you so anxious? Why are you so this? I'm like, wait a minute. I have an aunt who used to do that. You know, what's wrong? I'm like, you know, I'm fine. Like, I'm doing okay. Like, you're projecting all your stuff onto me.
Right.
So we do a lot of that. We don't pause to just observe. The other big barrier to R is that we have been trained to fake our feelings. You know, we mask them. It's emotional labor. I was at a big company in New York City giving a talk, and the CEO came up to me and he's like, interesting talk. I was like, thanks. He goes, not for me. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, maybe I'll have you train the people who work for me because then they'll get a better deal with me. I was like, this is so layered. And my point is that he just had no interest, right, in recognizing people's feelings. You know, he had the big corner office. So we have to want to gather this information. Another big error that we make is misperceive behavior for feeling. So for example, I come home, I hate you. I'm screaming and my arms are up. I'm clenching my fist. How am I feeling? Angry. Well, you don't know that because that's my story. I would come home screaming and yelling all the time. And the real feeling I was having was shame. Oh, but I'm not going to go to my father, who is a tough guy from the Bronx, and say, Daddy, you know, I'm feeling shame. I'm going to yell. I'm going to scream. I'm going to tell him I hate you and I'm not going to school. So then I got punished because my parents didn't know how to RUL me.
Right.
Happens all the time.
Okay, so I have a question about R. When you say people have to want to know more, does curiosity play a role? I mean, I find some people are more curious about their emotions and other people's emotions. Do you find that to be true?
100%. And, you know, that's why I talk about in my book this idea of an emotion scientist versus the emotion judge. Right, the emotion scientist.
Ooh, I want to be both. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you don't want to be the judge about your feelings, right? So that's.
No, I want to be the judge about your feelings.
I don't want to be the judge of anybody's feelings.
But I kind of like it. Sometimes it's terrible.
Well, you know, it's funny because some people say things. Well, I'm the scientist for the people I love the least.
Oh.
But at home we're just like automatic, right? Like, you have to want to know the information. So that's all that attitudinal piece that contributes to our skill development.
Okay. So R, clear on what that is, clear on the barriers. U, understanding, kind of same barrier set, same.
You know, that's a little bit more cognitive because that's where you have to learn the underlying themes around feelings. So that, for example, we know that the anger family is around injustice. that the disappointment is around unmet expectations, that jealousy, right, is this feeling that you're threatened that someone you care about is going to be taken away from you, or envy is about just wanting what someone else wants. Fear is about impending danger. Joy is about achieving a goal. And when we understand these feelings, what happens is that when I'm asking you to tell me what's going on, Brené, I, as the emotion scientist, am listening for these themes. Oh, I'm hearing an injustice theme. Oh, I'm hearing an unmet expectation theme. My kid is yelling that they hate me because we can't go visit his friend. But I don't think he's really angry. I think he's disappointed. And so I have to help regulate disappointment, not punish for anger. And that understanding piece is what helps us to label. And then in the labeling, we want to get granular. We want to get really nuanced in right. terms of how much fear. Is it a lot of fear or a little fear? Because it's a lot easier to regulate a little fear than it is a lot of fear.
And like you, the example you used around shame and fear, there are just some more socially, culturally acceptable ways of being that are based on gender, class, every descriptor.
Well, that's now getting to the E, the expression.
Okay.
So the R, the U, and the L is all about our experience, and the E and the R, expressing and regulating emotion, is all about what we do with these feelings. So you have to have permission to express. You have to have someone who's going to listen to you, someone who wants to listen to you. And we know there are so many barriers to that, right? There are, you know, racial barriers. There are cultural barriers. There's power dynamics, right? People who have greater power can express whatever the heck they want. People of lesser power have more fear around expressing. I even, That's you know, right. in our center, the Center for Emotional Intelligence that I direct, it's funny because I tell everyone, like, listen, this is the Center for Emotional Intelligence. I really want to know how you're feeling.